Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim.
Hi, everyone. Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Glad you could join us again for our podcast for Motivated to Lead. This week, we have joining us Bill Facto. Bill is the CEO, Chairman of the Board, and President of EarLens, located in Menlo Park, California. He is an executive with extensive background in the medtech world, and looking forward to his insights as he shares with us today. Bill, can you first off give us just a little bit of an overview of your career?
Sure. So I've been in medical devices for over 25 years now. I started my career in 1993 at U.S. Surgical, and that was I was in a sales position there. It was kind of during the time of the laparoscopic boom. It was a great time to be in medical devices. U.S. Surgical is a wonderful company, and we were introducing new stapling techniques, new laparoscopic procedures. There's a lot of physician training that was happening, a lot of time in the operating room, you know, providing verbal technical assistance. And so I was there for 5 years and moved to a number of leadership positions and management and group purchasing organizations, things along those lines. And then I was recruited by an ex-colleague at U.S. Surgical to join a startup. So my first startup experience was with a company called PerClose, which was a vessel closure technology startup in the Bay Area. It was a John Simpson company, and they had a new approach to close the femoral artery post cardiac cath, and it was a suture-based technology. And the company was ultimately acquired by Abbott Laboratories about 2.5-3 years later, and we were a public company that acquired. Mentor of mine and good friend Hank Plain was the CEO there, and I stayed with Abbott actually for 5 years after that, and Abbott moved me from Jacksonville, Florida, out to California to head up the marketing department. So I got a little more exposure to business inside the four walls, if you will, and understand the clinical regulatory quality side of things, and work closely with engineers. And so that was a good fun job. Eventually got promoted to general manager and carved out an entry strategy for Abbott to participate in the endovascular business. So they had been, after their PerClose acquisition, was kind of keen to get into cardiology. Ultimately, they would acquire, you know, Guidant along with Boston Scientific, but parts of Guidant in conjunction with Boston Scientific. But endovascular, we acquired a few companies, Yomed, and an embolic protection company based out of Europe, and we started to commercialize those products. And then I got recruited by Hank, and he introduced me to a guy named Josh Macauer. Josh is a serial entrepreneur and had an incubator called ExploraMed and was working on a new concept that very early, which ultimately became balloon sinuplasty and the creation of the company called Acclarent. So I was the founding CEO of that, if you will. There were three people that were there when I joined, and we took that product and that technology and company from concept to commercialization in about 18 months, and then ultimately about 5.5 years later got acquired by Johnson & Johnson. I stayed with Johnson & Johnson for a couple of years to do my best to integrate Acclarent into J&J, joined a few boards, 4 or 5 boards. Mm-hmm. Many of those companies have now been acquired, but one of those boards was EarLens. Rodney Perkins, who's also a serial entrepreneur and prominent otologist, had recruited me to come over. I wasn't ready to join as CEO initially, but I joined the board. And then ultimately, you know, 6 years later, almost, here I am as CEO.
Great. Well, tell us a little bit on your technology at EarLens. I've heard a lot about it. It sounds like it's in a market that's crowded. You've got kind of an interesting product line.
Yeah, no, we do. It's a really remarkable technology. Instead of using the normal mechanism of action, if you will, for an air conduction hearing aid, which is basically a microphone and a speaker that pushes air and amplifies sound. We actually don't use a speaker, so it's really a silent hearing aid, if you will. In the past, we've used light to transmit sound and energy. Now we do it through an RF link, is our latest generation. But we have it communicates with a little contact lens that sits on the eardrum. It is by far the most complicated project I've ever been involved in. It's got, you know, everything under the sun with, you know, we had lasers, we've got electrical engineering, we've got firmware and software, mechanical engineering, materials. And, you know, it's been a challenging project, but one that that I think is really going to be game changing. It really, the benefits of it is because we don't have the speaker, we're not have the same limitations associated with that, which
sure.
Those speakers are very small and they only amplify in a very narrow frequency range. So our system actually amplifies from 100 hertz to 10,000 hertz, which is about the frequency range for normal adult hearing. Mm. The other advantage is that because we don't have this speaker, a lot more gain before feedback. So we don't get this whistling that happens, especially sure. for patients that have a lot of severe hearing. We're able to give a lot more gain. And it's just a more natural sound because of the direct drive that we have on the eardrum. It really mimics the exact way in which the eardrum works in order to process sound. So those are the advantages. And again, no one's ever done it before. It's been a challenge, but we're really excited. We've made some great progress, and we're about to launch the go-to-market device here in the fall.
Wow, exciting. Yeah, sure. That's very cool. Yeah, I've been around grandparents and even my my mother having hearing aids. You're used to hearing the whistling and the squeaking as they right. they adjust it. But no, it sounds like it can definitely change people's lives. Tell me, if you were to go back to talk to a 22-year-old Bill, what advice, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give him?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because you know, so how much time do we have? But
we can do a two-parter.
Yeah, no, I think you know, at least from a business perspective, you know, I think the advice that I'd probably give is, you know, life in general, and whether that's business or personal, actually, it's really about overcoming adversity, right? And I think everybody gets exposed to adversity, some sooner in life than others, but it really is how you respond to that adversity. And I think you learn a lot about yourself and how that develops you. So, you know, I think in the early days of life, I think it's, you know, you take these things as, you know, gosh, the world's going to end tomorrow. And as you get older, you kind of put it in perspective that there's got to be a learning moment here. And so I think that'd probably be some advice that I'd give myself is, you know, don't be too alarmed with some of the adversity. It probably is going to lead to, you know, a better place.
Good. Any advice that you received that you would, looking back on it, you would have ignored? Or you should have ignored?
You know, it's interesting. You know, I'm not sure. I've had the luxury of really having some great mentors. And so I don't specifically recall any, gosh, that was some really bad advice I got. I've got a lot of really great people that I've been able to run stuff by. And but, you know, I think as we get older, I do think that, you know, you grow up with the belief that you can do anything. And you know, it's limitless. And I think as I've gotten older, I've realized that, you know, there are certain things I'm just not good at. Sure. And, so, you know, I might challenge that advice as, Bill, you can go and do whatever you want and be whoever you want, because, I've realized over the years, like I should never fix anyone's cars or, you know, be a mechanic, or, you know, there are certain skill sets I just do not have. So.
You mentioned about mentors and the importance of having people that can speak into your life and you know, give advice at certain periods. Who are some of the people that have influenced you over the years?
Yeah, so, you know, going back in my earliest part of my career, you know, I've I had the luxury of working at US Surgical, which, you know, some really great leaders. And, you know, as you think about the impact that that technology and the people have had in medical devices in general, it was just like right place at the right time. And Jerry McNamara, you know, was VP of sales or executive VP of sales and marketing at Intuitive for a very long time. He's been incredibly successful. You know, between him and Scott Terrell as my first manager that hired me, gave me a shot at 23 years old, one of the youngest people ever hired at US Surgical at the time. Those, I owe a lot to them. Jerry Goodman, who was my manager at that time, really, you know, took a very young, inexperienced person and said, this is how you, you know, this is how you communicate to physicians that are two times older or three times older almost than you are. And so I learned a lot from them. Hank Plain, Coy Blevins, and Bob Wood at Perclose were great mentors for me. And you know, when I got to Abbott, I just grew a ton just because it was, you know, seeing the other side of the business. And Chuck Foltz and Chip Hance and Rick Gonzalez were really instrumental for me. And then, you know, Josh Macauer and Hank and a lot of great Tom Prescott and folks that John Nira from an investment perspective that really took me under their wing because I really believe that without good support, without good mentorship, without really good people, it's tough to be successful. And every one of them contributed to my success over time.
Great. So if you were to give some advice to somebody putting together their first executive team, what advice would you give?
The advice that I would give is I think you have to start with understanding, you know, what is going to be required. And obviously things change along the way, but, you know, do you have a product? Do you have a company? Is it a commercial company? Is it an R&D? So you have to have an idea, I think, of kind of where you're going in order to be able to assemble the right skill sets along the way. And, you know, I think you hire in priority. A lot of times people say, okay, we're starting a company, I'm just going to hire my whole staff. Right. And I don't necessarily buy into that logic. I think it's, you know, you start with the core group that you absolutely need to have here to either provide the technical expertise or the, you know, regulatory, clinical, whatever that is. And then as the company retires risks and it grows and new challenges present, mm-hmm. I think you start to think about new leaders coming in to play those roles. And then I tell people, you know, if anyone out there has, you know, ever played fantasy football, it's a lot like drafting a team, right? And or it's a puzzle. You know, at some point you start with key components, but as you grow, you get a better appreciation over time as to how the management team works together, where their strengths are, those last three or four hires on a management team, I think, are the most critical. And it's usually at a stage when you're transitioning into a, you know, going commercial or the next stage of commercial. And those hires, you have to be really focused on and have a strong conviction as to what the criteria is to round out the team. If you start early, you can add more people. But when you get down to the last couple slots, you really, you know, the diversity, the experience levels, those are the things that you really want to pay a little more attention to.
Do you have any favorite interview questions that you like to ask?
You know, I do. I have one question I really enjoy asking because I have a tendency to spend the majority of the time in the interview on this part and talking with them. They've been screened out a lot. So sure. I get past the initial kind of ones. So, but I typically say, you know, I assume that they've made a decision. So the first part to me is, where is their head? Are they looking at other options? Are they still thinking that they may stay at their current job? So I first try to qualify, you know, where are you mentally in the process? So I can have a good appreciation, because sometimes you're in sell mode, sometimes you're in really interview mode. And it's good just to check the basis as to where everybody is there. But you know, a lot of the times the questions I ask is, you know, as you think about your next opportunity, assuming that you've already made that decision, have you put some thought into what are the key attributes that you're looking for in that job? And I like to go through those because to me, that's the opportunity to pair expectations, right? If somebody likes being in an environment where, you know, there's no chaos, this is probably not the right place for you. You know, and if they want a big company, they want security, all the, those are going to be tough things that, you know, we probably just don't have a good match here. But if they've said, hey, you know, we want to be at a startup, we want, you know, be in California, we need to, I want to work for, you know, good people, good management, you know, and that helps me shape the interview to make sure that, you know, there is a fit there and the expectations both sides are met.
Great. So if somebody is looking at their, maybe at their stage in their career that they're looking to work with some outside investors, they've gone through maybe an angel round and now they're looking for some additional investment. What advice would you've gone through? I know a number of rounds and you've raised a lot of money as far as, but what advice would you give somebody that's going to be working with potentially some VCs or private equity? What advice would you give having gone through that a number of times?
Yeah, well, I will say it's you got to kiss a lot of frogs and you know, you have to have the right mindset going into it because I think that that's part of it. And it's preparation like anything else big in life. And, you know, certainly raising money is no easy feat. So I think you want to have mentors that have gone through the process that can help you and manage expectations. And you don't want to get too high and you don't want to get too low. And, you know, I think the more options you have, typically my experience is the better the outcome. If you're, you know, focusing on one, that is a pretty vulnerable position to be in. So, you know, I think you've got to be targeted because there's a lot of people out there that have money. You want to be qualifying them to make sure. And then if you can get some, you know, introductions, warm introductions are a lot better than cold calling and take full advantage of that. But once you get your targeted list, you want to also try to work everyone through at the same pace. It's probably like, you know, interviewing candidates. If, you know, one's way further along than another, the timing is not always ideal. And sometimes you have to make choices that may not be in the best interest. So if you can have the cadence there that lines up and you can, you know, make a really informed decision at the time, those are the things that that at least have worked for me in the past.
Great. Thanks so much for that advice. What, anything that you've read lately or that's on your bookshelf that you think would be definite reads for somebody that's been helpful to you?
Well, lately I haven't had as much time to read as I'd like, but, you know, I will say, you know, influential books throughout my career and, you know, different stages that I recall, you know, I read more of the Bible today than I ever have. I think that's an important one personally. You know, from a business book perspective, you know, one of my favorite has always been the Oz Principle. It's an easy read that talks about accountability versus victimization. So I really like that one. You know, Blue Ocean Strategy is one that I really liked. But probably my favorites and maybe one of the most impactful for me, you know, I read Good to Great, obviously, when I was at Abbott, they were featured in that book. But emotional intelligence, you know, to me is one of the most critical important books, and I would highly recommend it for people, especially, you know, from R&D, you know, engineering perspective and people that want to come, you know, become CEOs. I think having a strong EQ, you know, I think there's a certain baseline IQ everyone has to have in order to be successful, but certainly EQ goes a long way. And, you know, the Daniel Goleman book, you know, to me is one of the more valuable ones.
Yeah, absolutely. Any parting advice that you can give somebody as they're moving into that leadership role?
Well, you know, I'd just say get good mentors, and people that you can bounce things off that you respect and that you trust. I think that's a good start. Just realize sometimes you have to take two steps backwards to take a step forward. And, you know, as those things happen, you know, just continue to be even keeled. You know, in this business, if you're going to be a CEO, you can't get too high and you can't get too low, or you're going to kind of whipsaw your organization around. So I think that's an important quality, and have fun and enjoy the journey. You know, these things go by incredibly fast. It's hard to sometimes appreciate all the value that creation that's happening. And you spend a lot of time with people on your team, and you should like them and you should enjoy it and do your best to try to enjoy the journey along the way.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Bill. This has been fun. I've enjoyed the conversation, and I know it's going to be helpful.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.